Shimon, the National Council of Young Israel put out a statement after the Pittsburgh shooting, in which they urged American Jews not to politicize the shooting. They condemned those who condemned Trump, saying that they were anti-Trump beforehand, and they were merely politicizing the shooting. Again, they called for unity. And they said that Trump was basically Israel's best friend. What's your response to that press release?
Shock and horror. Look, there's a breakdown of logical thinking in that, yes, one could be against Trump beforehand and then see something bad about the dynamic of Trump and America and point it out. They think they scored some sort of point by saying it's the anti-Trump guys who are criticizing him. It's typical of the breakdown of logical thought and discourse. It's a small example, but an example. The politicizing line, I think there should be a prohibition against using it. The Republicans, the gun nuts, trot it out every time there's a mass murder in America. Let's not politicize it. Let's pretend that we're sending our thoughts and prayers. But how are human beings supposed to deal with problems? You're supposed to figure out how they happened and how to stop them and how to make things better. So you want to call that politicizing it? No, it's being human and reasonable and using common sense. The problem of people who shouldn't get their hands on guns and policing anti-Semitism and trying to tone down the kind of talk that Trump is busy firing up, these are real societal problems. Wanting to address them is the duty of every good citizen, certainly of every politician, every leader, and certainly of the Jewish community. So it's awful. I condemn the words
I found that
whoever said that.
I mean, interesting is not the word. The fact that they omitted from the press release that on, I think, his Twitter feed, the shooter, the murderer, he hasn't been convicted yet, but said explicitly that he was going down to the synagogue because of the caravan, and this would help stop the caravan. And the synagogue, according, he had, I guess, Googled the website, went to their website, had been involved in supporting HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. So there seemed to be, some connection between what was going on in the political race in the United States and him. Of course, he could have done this. It seems like someone like him, with a whole warehouse full of firearms, would have probably got there sooner or later. But I also found it kind of remarkable that they also, a lot of Jewish groups who were took the same tack, said, this is just anti-Semitism. Saying anything else, talking about any other issues is taking the ball off anti-Semitism when people have spent their whole lives trying to figure out what are different motivations for anti-Semitism, which is a legitimate task. And we wouldn't say that they're, particularly Jewish researchers and academics are anti-Semitic. So I think that was somewhat shocking. And then I'm sorry to be political, but I always find it interesting that we talked about the motivations why Jews are now voting Republicans or a segment of the Jewish population. And having been to shuls in the States where there's a police car outside the shul on Shabbat, I always wonder how can the majority of this congregation vote for politicians who advocate no restrictions on gun control? Particularly if you're a Jewish, you're a minority, you know you're under threat. It just beggars the imagination how someone could possibly do that. And I find again what you said, not to discuss these issues, to play the game of this is a time for thoughts and prayers. It's not a time of politicizing, when of course they're politicizing in the sense of saying Trump is the best thing that's happened to the Jewish community and Israel. Again, I understand their motivation. I think a lot of people are sincere, but I think on the other hand, intellectual honesty demands that you engage in the debate, and they basically try to deflect any blame away from Trump for the shooting. Mitch, there was withering criticism both in the press here in Israel, at least in Haaretz. Allison Summers wrote I think, a really, really good piece. Places like The Forward in the United States, media outlets and Jewish media outlets against our Israeli representatives in the United States with regard to the shooting. Can you basically go into somewhat of the details and inform us what all the fuss was about and tell us what you think?
Well, I mean, Israel in general has some policy deficiencies in these areas. First of all, what does Israel have to do with Pittsburgh? Meaning the shooter didn't say anything about Israel. He, you know, it seems that he was motivated by some, you know, threat or supposed threat of immigration to the United States. And synagogue was opening its doors and helping immigrants. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is not helping too many Hebrew immigrants these days, but immigrants in general, which is a very popular among left of center secular Jews in America, is to help people that are fleeing persecution or just people that want to start a new life. It doesn't have to do with Israel. Why do we want to stick ourselves in here? Why do we want to, you know, be conspicuous in an issue where we have no business? So that's the first thing. Israel didn't need to do that. It didn't have anything to do with Israel. And it took away from, I think, the sensitivity of the debate that was raging in the United States. 2 weeks before an election, people were, if you looked anywhere in the Jewish community, people were saying, Trump is responsible, he's not responsible, he bears responsibility, he doesn't bear responsibility, whatever it was. But it was an internal American discussion. And we didn't need to send a minister to talk about terrorism. We didn't need to send a minister to hug them. That very same minister, Naftali Bennett, who didn't have time a week earlier in Tel Aviv in 3 days to brief the GA, which is the representative organization of all the federations. He's a diaspora affairs minister, but he didn't have time to brief them. But now, on Motzi Shabbos, he leaves right away to be with the people in Pittsburgh before they've even removed the bodies from the synagogue. He's there. But all this boils down to one thing, and that's a really, really horrible policy that we've all been brainwashed on from very young. And that is, we have to make Aliyah, Israel is our home, and basically, we don't belong in other countries. So what happens is, Israeli leaders, they love to reward terror and anti-Semitism. Now, what do I mean? There's terrorism in France. People are killed. So what happens? The prime minister comes out and he says, well, you know, you should be careful here, and you're always welcome in Israel. Your home is in Israel. And the president of France says to him, please don't say that. It's destabilizing to my country. These people are my citizens. I view them as full citizens. So we do that, we actually reward terror. Because if you were a terrorist, you would say, wow, if I do something in France or the United States, the Israeli prime minister or diaspora affairs minister or education minister or foreign minister is going to come here and tell the Jews to leave. Sounds like a good thing to do. It's the total opposite of the Israeli reaction when there's terror in Gush Etzion, which there's terror all the time there. In Gush Etzion or in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv, we say, we're here to stay. We're not going to leave. We're in fact going to make more settlements, and we're going to make more of an Israeli presence. So we're giving a very schizophrenic response to terror and anti-Semitism. In Israel, we say, it's not going to deter us. We're going to stay here, and we're going to fight it. In America, we tell the Jewish community to run. And the other thing is we really don't respect their lives there. Meaning there are people there who have spent their entire lives. As Shimon says, his family's been there 100 years, more than 100 years. My family, I was the first immigrant in my family in 100 years. Jews in America are involved in building institutions, building schools, building Jewish life. And when we say the future is really in Israel, it's not in the diaspora. We don't respect who they are and what they are. And that's a problem on our part.
You know, I totally agree with what you said, but part of me is saying, yeah, we don't respect who they are and where they are. Now, there is this, you said schizophrenia, and I think you're right, there's a tension in where we are today in Israel, in that we try to understand the diaspora and interact with the diaspora, and we use the diaspora. Look how Bibi, my God, he runs the, oh, there, it's much more complicated because he uses non-Jews as well. He runs the Congress and he talks. And yet there is deep in the Zionist ethos, Shlilat HaGolah. It's there, some degree of negating the notion that Jews belong anywhere other than Israel. I intellectually don't subscribe to that. Intellectually, I understand everybody's got their own row to hoe and their own life to make, and it's okay. But something inside me resonates to that notion that, well, you really should be here after all. Not that it's safer, it's perhaps arguably less safe. But I'm sort of just, yes, we have that problem. We have that problem. And it plays so badly in Paris or in Pittsburgh. It really does. And not seeing it on Bennett's part, and he has this, his wife's American, and to just be so insensitive to how badly it plays is a little weird, but.
Well, I think he sort of got creamed a bit. He first of all, he did things which were really untenable. He took issue with the ADL statistics. They may be wrong, but why get in there in the first place? Yeah. It was just unfathomable. And then you have Ron Dermer, the Israeli ambassador to United States. Repeating they're anti-Semites on both sides. Yes, we know they're anti-Semites on both sides. We know that there's Jeremy Corbyn and there's anti-Semites on the left. And no one's saying that they're not. But that doesn't negate, that doesn't do away with the problem that occurred. So they were remarkably insensitive. And to just wrap up this section of the podcast, I want to ask you, Shimon, it seems that, and hear Mitch as well, it just seems that basically they were playing to Israeli sensitivity and the Orthodox population in the United States. That was their kind of audience, to say, look, we don't, or, but to a large degree, and saying, don't be critical of Trump. Trump is our guy. Don't get into this, because if you possibly could hurt Trump, you're hurting Israel. That's with the message. And I'm wondering also, basically, because they were so tin-eared, but they've begun to write off conservative Jews, reform Jews. That's part of, an inevitable part of what Mitch was talking about current Israeli policy in Netanyahu, and basically saying, well, we don't see you guys as the future. There's a divide between your interests and our interests. We have this constituency in the United States, which is, Sheldon Adelson and all these people who give money to Trump and support Trump. And as long as those people are on our side, we don't really need you guys. We don't have to cater any longer to you. And so there's been this, there's a big schism now, in other words, between, let's say, the current Israeli government and the bulk of American Jewry on a lot of issues. And I'm saying maybe these guys aren't so stupid after all. They're just writing them off. They're just saying, you are of no consequence anymore in Jewish affairs. You once were. You were once a player. You're not players now. And we can, to some degree, ignore you without any political consequences.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis of what they're either consciously or somewhat less than consciously thinking. Look, this past Shabbat, I brought a group of American Jews from the Midwest to look at a couple of cutting-edge synagogues, one a non-Orthodox one and one an Orthodox egalitarian one. And we walked into, right here in Baca, and we walked into the Orthodox egalitarian one, and a woman was saying the Haftarah. And the Israeli secular, 6'2", security guy looks at the woman saying the Haftarah and says, what's going on? How can this be? What a place have you brought us to? And I said, this is why I love my work. This is worth $1 million, what this guy just said.
Right.
The average Israeli is an Orthodox Jew. If they need a synagogue, if they need a rabbi, if they need a Kaddish Chas V'Shalom, if they need a bar mitzvah, a wedding, they want an Orthodox rabbi. They want an Orthodox synagogue. There are historical reasons. There was never a reform movement that was indigenous to Israel. The reasons are well known. And I think the politicians recognize that there's very little traction here in Israel for the liberal movements, for the non-Orthodox movements. There's also a strangeness to the reform and conservative movements for the average Israeli. They're in English. They seem so American, whereas the average Orthodox Jew is somehow more connected to Israel, goes to Israel more, spends time in Israel more. So there's a sociological dynamic of, yes, there are more points of contact with the judicial community. And what you said is very interesting, Leon, that there's a kind of a passive and conscious writing off of what looks to be a disappearing species. So whether that's going to happen or not, that none of them will have Jewish grandchildren or not, who knows? Who knows? I see a lot of dynamism and energy in the non-Orthodox world. But put together, it does make for a real gap between the average Israeli citizen, as well as a politician, and the average American Jew when they think about Judaism. I mean, they could be friends and have a good time together, but when they think about the Jewish future in Judaism, there is this disconnect, I think.
Well, I think you summed it up well, Leon, but let's go back to politics again, meaning part of the reason is a schism between the Israeli government or the Israeli leaders like Netanyahu and the reform and conservative is because it helps in his face. I mean, look at who he's made into the devil, the New Israel Fund. The New Israel Fund is destabilizing the state of Israel. They're with the enemies of Israel. And it's a great enemy for his base in Ashdod and Ashkelon and Kiryat Malachi and in Katamon and in all these places, because it's the leftist liberal Jew trying to change the way of life here in Israel. But the fact is, it is so callous because they don't recognize who these people are. Meaning, the New Israel Fund, they raise something like $30 million a year. Who do you think they raise from? They raise from people that I grew up with. New Rochelle, Scarsdale, Yorktown Heights, all these places. There are liberal Jews that are not religious, that are not connected even, some of them. Some of them go to Reform and Conservative synagogues. Some of them belong to a Jewish, exclusively Jewish golf club, and paying $500,000 to get in and play golf and go have dinner with only Jewish people is their connection to Judaism. And that's okay. And a place like the New Israel Fund, and I'm not here to promote them or defend them, they give money to the Hartman Institute, to Hapoel Katamon, the soccer team right here that's taken a championship. They give money to Women in the Wall. To say that they support terror is just a cop-out. And when I've challenged any of those people, they say that they give to left-of-center organizations that are supporting Arab rights, and some of those people have made statements on Facebook. It's ludicrous. But it's a very, very easy target, just like George Soros is. And as Shimon says, we got Sheldon Adelson. Like, he's a bully. And he uses his money to promote his agenda. I mean, he's put about $150 million into a newspaper that doesn't make any money, Yisrael Hayom, just so he can get his agenda out. But that's okay. That's okay to do that, because that's basically supporting the Netanyahu view. And that's the tool that he uses to get elected. But when someone else will do that, will use those same legal means to do something else that will promote something that is an opposition to Netanyahu, an opposition to the right-wing view or the Jewish Zionist nationalist view of what Israel should be today and what Israel should be in the future, then they are the enemy of the Jewish people and the enemy of the state of Israel. And if that's really the attitude, future is really very bleak here.
Okay. Thank you for Rabbi Felix. Thank you to Mitchell Barak. Please subscribe to our podcast. You can direct message me on Facebook or send me an email, comments on the Facebook. We enjoyed our first episode, and we hope to have many more. Thank you very much.